A lot of people around the country are concerned about the presence of genetically modified organisms in the food supply. Both California and Washington, as you know, voted in the last year plus on requiring GMO labels on food. Both of those votes failed. Today's guest takes a look at the concerns over GMO in a documentary film. The title makes a tidy little palindrome, GMO OMG. Jeremy Seifert is the director and our guest. GMO OMG gets two screenings at Ashland's Varsity Theater on Thursday, brought to town by the Ashland Independent Film Festival. Jeremy Seifert, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you. You, I understand, live in North Carolina with your wife and three kids, and this is your second film after Dive. What was Dive about?
So Dive was dealing with dumpster diving and food waste. I had been dumpster diving for a couple years just to sort of supplement the food we bought at the grocery store. And it was introduced to me from some friends who were surprised that I didn't know you could hop in a Trader Joe's dumpster and pull out hundreds of dollars of amazing fresh food. So it didn't begin as any kind of social activism. It just began as, you know, why not? There was all this amazing food. But I was the question nagged me of why it was being tossed out and not giving to people in need. So I made a short doc about 45 to 50 minutes long, and it went on to win 22 film festivals around the world and launched me into this next film.
So that response really was a big, real boost to keep making films.
Absolutely. And it connected us with some amazing people. We even did a screening at the Capitol in D.C., and that's where I met Elizabeth Kucinich, Dennis Kucinich's wife, and she ended up coming on this on GMO OMG as an executive producer.
I noticed that. She is an executive producer, among others who are listed as producers for the film. And Dennis Kucinich himself appears in the film, I understand.
Yeah. And Dennis, 10 years back, introduced three different bills, none of which got a hearing, and so they weren't even voted on in Congress. But one of those was to label GMOs, and another one was to protect organic farmers. So what's happening is farmers in the past have been sued by Monsanto and others when their fields are contaminated, which is completely upside down because it's their business which is affected when they're contaminated.
Yeah, that has been an interesting trick that people have remarked upon for years now, particularly in the Canadian case. The name of the farmer escapes me at the moment, but where he actually got sued.
Pfizer, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that was it. So obviously, Dive, your first film, focused on food. So was it a logical step then to make your next film about GMO in food?
No, it was not logical, and it and I didn't want to make another film about food. You know, I didn't grow up in a very food conscious family necessarily. I didn't have like hypersensitive parents or grow up with organic or growing our own food. You know, I only got into food because of dumpster diving, and, you know, when you eat trash, it sort of alters your perspective on both food and trash, and also hunger. And the GMO film came about because of a tiny little article that came out of Haiti about 10,000 rural farmers marching in the streets crying out against Monsanto. And Monsanto had given Haiti a gift of 475 tons of seeds after the earthquake. And they committed to burning the seeds if they came to them. And at the time, I didn't really know what GMOs were exactly, and I especially didn't understand the international, sort of, as Vandana Shiva describes it, the hijacking of the global food supply. I didn't understand any of that, but I had been to Haiti before and understood the poverty and the hunger, and so I didn't quite understand why they would take such a radical stance against these seeds and this company. So I just really felt compelled to go down there and listen to their stories.
Did the people who protested end up hungry because of their protest?
You know, I'm not sure. They were already hungry and already struggling, and many of them still are. They have quite an amazing network of support just as a community with their leader, Siobhan Jean-Baptiste, up in Papaye. But, you know, that's exactly the case where instead of dumping free seeds on these people, seeds that come from a different country that don't grow well in their soil and that eventually will enslave them in a cycle of debt to a multinational corporation, instead it's to look at what they're doing and to help them implement those programs in a sustainable way. But that takes real humility and research and a true desire to help, not to have, you know, ulterior motives.
When you say enslave them in a cycle of debt, is that because once they would be planting these seeds, they'd have to use just those seeds over and over again and keep coming back to Monsanto for them?
Yeah, that's historically what happens. They accept the seeds, which in this case were hybrid seeds, and hybrid seeds don't save well. So you need to purchase them again. So, you know, first time it's free, second time you have to buy them. And then after 2 or 3 years, they would say, well, what you really need are these genetically modified seeds, which are Roundup ready, so you have to buy the chemical herbicide that we also make. And they also rely on heavy inputs of synthetic fertilizers. All these are big costs to people who make very little. And so you see like a story come out of India where the cotton belt, which became the BT cotton belt, which is genetically modified cotton from Monsanto, has now been renamed the suicide belt. And there are an estimated 270,000 suicides from farmers in that area, many of whom have been caught in this cycle of debt and can't get out of it.
All right, we have much more to talk about with Jeremy Seifert. His film is GMO OMG, showing twice this Thursday in Ashland at the Varsity Theater, brought in by the Ashland Independent Film Festival. We'll talk more with Jeremy and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jeremy Seifert. He's the director of the film GMO OMG. It's a documentary film that features is Jeremy Seifert and his family, among many other people. GMO OMG will show in Ashland at the Varsity Theater Thursday evening at 5:30 and 8, brought in by the Ashland Independent Film Festival. And Jeremy Seifert will be there and talk back via Skype. You can join us right here, right now on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about GMO OMG. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Was there any difference, Jeremy, at the beginning of how you define GMOs versus how anybody else defined GMOs? It seems like the gene gun is always the appliance that rises in this discussion.
Yeah, well, before I answer that, I got to give a little shout-out to my family. I've got quite a bit of family up in the Pacific Northwest, and the pronunciation of our last name is actually Seifert. It's German, so I just had to make that correction so they'd all be very, very happy.
I appreciate that. I was going by the old San Francisco 49ers coach.
Right, exactly. Yeah, how I define them and how others define them, is that kind of the question?
Yes.
Well, yeah, it was hard to get at, understanding the scientific, inner workings of what's happening. That was some of the criticism of the film, that I dumbed down the debate or didn't go deep enough into the science.
I noticed that in the reviews.
Yeah, which is a bit of a lame criticism. It's essentially asking that I should have made a different film. What I was making was a film looking primarily at the cultural significance, the social significance, and, as Wendell Berry says, when you remove culture from agriculture and replace it with business and science, you remove people from the equation. And I was looking more at that phenomenon and how it's possible that we're all eating these every single day and no one even knows what they are or that they're eating them. But to get back to a definition of GMOs, I mean, from a very basic standpoint, despite the industry spin, which says they're no different from any other food because we've been modifying and participating in food through seed selection for thousands of years, a GMO is absolutely unique because it's only been made possible through the first 60 years ago, the discovery of the double helix of DNA, and then the birth of biotechnology and transgenic technology. And what that means is that you can take a gene from one organism, say a flounder, a fish, and insert it into the DNA of another organism, a tomato. So you have the Flavor Saver tomato of the mid-90s, which was supposed to have a longer shelf life. And what this does is it crosses a barrier between species that we've never seen in the natural process.
Because flounder and tomato will not naturally mate, right?
Right. Which I got a little flustered on the Bill Maher show in September with David Frum, and I think I shouted out, I've never seen a fish have sex with a tomato, and that's what I was referring to.
Oh, good. Thanks for that clarification. One of the things you were talking about a second ago, though, was about the BT cotton belt in India. BT, I assume, is Bacillus thuringiensis.
Correct.
Which is which is used as a pesticide. In fact, I know that there was a webworm, or tent caterpillars, as you probably call them in the East Coast, outbreak in the Rogue Valley a couple of years ago. And the store shelves were cleared out of BT in no short order. So it is something that people will use as a pesticide themselves. But is the issue then that it is not meant naturally to be contained within the actual plant?
Yeah, I think the issue is that naturally occurring Bacillus thuringiensis, which is a soil-dwelling bacteria, used in moderation, and organic farmers use it and spray it, apply it on the plants themselves as a defense mechanism against certain pests. There's a big difference between that and a modified version of that, which is spliced into the DNA of, say, a BT corn, and it's in every cell of the plant, and it's sort of in the, quote, on position 24 hours a day, solidly, which is why now we're starting to have what are called superbugs, and they're just bugs like many, many bugs that have built up resistance to our attempts to kill them. And the other, issue at hand there is that when you modify something like that and then splice it into the DNA of a crop like that and don't do full life-term studies to see what the potential health effects are or the environmental effects when it spreads to its wild relatives. It's really, there are so many unknowns, and yet we just pushed it through and started feeding it to our children.
When you say full life-term studies, life of the plant, life of the creature consuming it?
Lifelong studies, meaning, in this case, with rats. Most of the studies done by the industry or affiliated with the industry are 3-month-long studies. And that's almost just enough time to start seeing results. It's right before longer-term studies like Professor Saralini in France did a 2-year study, that's the life of a rat. And it was just after 3 months where things started showing up as unusual.
I saw in the trailer for GMO-OMG, and it's mentioned in some of the reviews as well, the shots of rats with tumors. What's the story there?
Well, the story there is Professor Saralini in France has done this 2-year-long study. And what he was doing was studying Monsanto's NK603 corn. And this was approved for market release in the EU after a 3-month-long study. And Saralini, like so many people, wasn't satisfied with that study and the affiliation to the industry and the length of time. So he did a study with NK603 corn by itself, the corn with Roundup, which is found in residue form on corn, and then Roundup by itself in water. And, the results were startling. And it wasn't just tumors, and many of those were mammary tumors, but there were issues with the pituitary glands, kidneys, endocrine disruption. You can look that study up online. It was published in an internationally renowned peer-reviewed journal of toxicology. So what happens with studies like that are independent, he was shot down by many, many scientists around the world who are, again, associated with or affiliated to the industry, who said, this study is bunk, this guy is a fraud, This is ridiculous. Pay no attention. And yet, you know, scientifically, the way you disprove someone's results is to repeat the study and get different results. And that's really what we should be asking for in this country, is a two-year-long study on the various GMOs to see once and for all, and it would be publicly funded and transparent so we could watch it as it transpires to see if there are any health implications. Because right now, Seralini's study, I wouldn't say is absolutely conclusive, but it certainly raises many red flags and should be repeated and an impetus for further deeper studies.
Jeremy Seifert is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the director of the documentary film GMO-OMG, which will be brought to Ashland this Thursday for showings at the Varsity Theater. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about GMO and how it should be dealt with in today's world. Phone numbers on the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So you were saying that the Monsanto NK603 corn is approved for use in the EU?
Correct.
All right. So generally, though, as you look at Europe, I mean, are the feelings about GMO quite different there?
Yeah, they most certainly are. First, there's general knowledge of GMOs. It was funny in the United States going around talking to different people in markets or restaurants, gas stations, wherever I was, if they eat GMOs or know what they were. And, you know, the typical response was, what the hell is that?
Yeah, I noticed that man on the street segment, and it seemed like there were a lot of hands. I mean, you didn't have to go far to find the people who didn't know much, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, almost, yeah, pretty much, you know, 95% of the people. But, you know, every 20 or so people, there would be someone who says, oh, yeah, GMOs, no, I mean, I try to avoid them. And, you know, sure enough, they were from some country in Europe. So, you know, what happened over a decade ago is that in the EU, the media came out in a huge way writing about this new kind of food, this biotech, agrochemical industry-created food that was something new, and they wrote extensively on it. And as a culture and society, they had real conversations about it, and people demanded labeling. And what that did is it made many companies like Nestle and Kraft reformulate the ingredients of their products. So you have Heinz ketchup in the EU. Instead of with corn syrup, it's got sugar. Which shows it's totally possible to make the products without GMOs. And it also shows the power of people to determine what their food will be. So, yeah, there's greater knowledge there. There's labeling there. There's labeling in 64 countries around the world, including China, Russia, India, Syria. And yet here, the sort of home turf of the biotech industry and these crops, we don't have labeling, and we have maybe the most widespread ignorance, which is fairly ironic.
I did notice just in the grocery store the other day, it seems like, and I do the grocery shopping for our household, so I'm going to be the one to see this, but it seems like there is more voluntary labeling of products as we contain no GMOs.
Yeah.
Is that happening more from your perspective as well?
Yeah, that's happening to a greater degree. And because, you know, people have had no luck pushing the government, because the government, as we know, has just a few little cracks in it that are open to the corporations that help them determine how things go. So companies and people through grassroots movements or just through the conviction of the particular supplier or company are beginning to label their own products. The biggest one is in Northern Washington State is the Non-GMO Project. And that is a pretty strict verification process that foods go through to be verified non-GMO. And also what you have happening is Whole Foods has made an announcement that they will label all GMOs in their stores by 2018. And what that's really meaning in practice is that all their suppliers are scrambling right now to source non-GMO products for their stuff. So they're really underway with that to meet that deadline by 2018. So that's going to make, a big splash in this movement and issue.
Is Whole Foods big enough, you think, to have that big a dent in the market? I mean, compared to, for example, if Walmart or Kroger grocery stores said, we're going to start requiring GMO labeling on food.
Exactly. I mean, if Walmart does anything, it's like as if it's just done. You know, they affect so many more people and buyers. But I think Whole Foods doing it, I think they only have 350 or 400 stores across the country. But I think every little thing that's happening, it's instead of one big movement that suddenly GMOs are labeled, I think it's even, you know, California's Proposition 37, which failed, but that awakened so many people to the issue who didn't even know there was an issue beforehand. And it looks like I-522 might not make it either. But again, I think that that's another touch or push to move things forward. And I think Whole Foods making this announcement and actually taking the steps to do it, it's going to change so many, hundreds of suppliers to that store are going to now source non-GMO products and maybe, hopefully, organic products for, you know, to go into their whatever, frozen pizzas or whatever it is. And I think that does help slowly create change. And this probably will be change from the ground up rather than the top down.
What I was going to ask what you make of the failures of Prop 37 and I-522, which does appear to fail in Washington. And it should be pointed out that Washington's ballot counting thing really just requires ballots that have been postmarked on Election Day. Which is why that the returns are coming in late. The people, obviously, who don't like the idea of GMO in the food supply care very much about it. You know, they're very passionate about it. Obviously, they make documentaries about it. So what do you suppose is the reason that these measures keep failing at the ballot box?
Propaganda machine and misinformation on a grand scale. You know, Proposition 37... the last 30 days of that, the industry spent $1 million a day to defeat it. They were outspent almost 10-1 on that. And, you know, all they have to do is say something over and over again, and with a slick enough advertisement or card or, newspaper ad or whatever, and people who don't have time, like so many of us, to really delve into the issue and understand it, will believe it. So they said over and over again, Proposition 37 is poorly written, it's confusing, and it doesn't really do what it sets out to do. And beyond that, it will raise your grocery prices by $400 a year, and it will hurt farmers.
And what did you find out was the truth about? I mean, the raising the grocery prices thing was the big one that stuck out with 37. I mean, we do serve part of California here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was a study bought and paid for by the industry, and I can't think of the name of the group that did that study yet. And it's hilarious and sort of disheartening, too, to see that then the board of editors of the Scientific American, when they came out against GMO labeling a couple months ago, they cited that same study as if it were a fact. The fact of the matter is companies change their labels every year, sometimes many, many times a year, because they have special promotions or they want a new look or they're, you know, boasting that it's gluten-free even though it wouldn't even have gluten in it or whatever it is. Companies are always changing their labels. So there would be absolutely no cost to us, the buyers. So that didn't happen in the European Union and other countries that have labeling. So that's simply not true. And, you know, the other lie there that it would, in Washington, the claim was that it would hurt farmers, which, I mean, if you look at the history of this and modern agriculture and, you know, Earl Butz in the 70s saying, get big or get out, and the death of the family farmer, it's just a bit disingenuous to say labeling GMOs is going to hurt farmers when they've been hurt over and over again by these mega corporations.
I'm just reading Sandy Doughton's piece about I-522 in Washington, and the spending was 3-1 against I-522, which would require GMO labeling in the state of Washington. So that's a pretty significant margin.
Yeah, and almost all of the spending was done from companies that aren't in that state. I think maybe all of them are out of state. So you have an in-state ballot initiative that's been bought out by multinationals that aren't even in that state. They employ no one in that state. I mean, maybe, yeah, farmers in that state lease their seeds, which they can't save. And but that's, you know, fairly disturbing that you can have a state ballot initiative that can be taken over from those outside.
We are talking to Jeremy Seifert about his film GMO OMG, showing in Ashland at the Varsity Theater, 5:30 and 8 o'clock on Thursday, brought in by the Ashland Independent Film Festival. He'll be available for talk back then, but you can talk back now. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we return. Jeremy Seifert and your phone calls and emails when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today, Jeremy Seifert, documentary filmmaker, the director of the film on genetically modified organisms called GMO OMG. It's a documentary in a personal style, similar to the style of Michael Moore, and it will be shown in Ashland, 5:30 and 8 o'clock on Thursday at the Varsity Theater. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about GMOs generally and the film more specifically, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. We've talked to a couple of times in this conversation about farmers, and one of the arguments against the ballot measure in Washington, in Initiative 522, that would require GMO labeling was this argument that it would hurt farmers. You did talk to some farmers for GMO OMG. Were you looking for big farmers, small farmers? What did you go in search of?
You know, I just wanted to talk to the good old boys out there and good old gals. You know, I wanted to talk to farmers on all sides of the issue and all scales. So I talked to some giant mega farmers who have, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 acres and like homesteaders, organic farmers, farmers who do CSA, community supported agriculture. I talked to GMO seed dealers. I mean, these guys, especially, you know, because the film comes out, you know, sort of possibly against GMO.
Possibly.
You know, but you could interpret it that way. I think it comes out more for biodiversity, for taking back our food and paying attention to what we grow and how we grow it. But so many of the GMO farmers and seed dealers, and these guys are so amazing, and they really are, many of them, the salt of the earth. And I just loved being with them and talking with them. And, you know, a guy like Mike Adams, a seed dealer and farmer, you know, he showed me where his grandpa used to put the corn in the attic and drive it into the nails to dry out the seeds to save again. And he's not okay with the fact that now they can't save seeds. And he's not okay with farms getting bigger and farmers fewer. I mean, he likened it to the big Walmarts and giant stores and corporations coming in and cleaning out all the five and dime stores and small businesses. And yet, that's the world he lives in. And organic, for many of these guys, doesn't quite make sense yet, or they don't fully understand it, or some of them do fully understand it, would do it, but they don't feel like they could survive in the 3 years that it takes to transition from GMO or conventional farming to organic farming. There's a 3-year process there with no support from the government and our tax subsidies in the farm bill, which is a shame.
We have a question here from Cassie, no town given. She says, if something's labeled organic, does that mean it's not GMO?
Yes. By its very definition, organic means that it cannot contain genetically modified ingredients, and it also means that it can't be grown with sewage sludge and can't use synthetic toxic herbicides and pesticides on it. So organic really is a great standard. It was under attack a decade ago. Many of these same companies wanted GMOs to be included under the definition of organic. People like Dennis Kucinich and many others fought against that. It was the most comments that the FDA has ever received about an issue when the organic standard came under attack. And so it's remained true. So that actually does mean something.
One of the farmers in the film, as shown in the trailer, says that corn has been identified, a particular kind of corn has been identified as a pesticide?
Right. The BT corn, which produces its own pesticide, so if an insect flies over and munches on it, it'll kill it, and they're sort of designed to attack different insects. It is registered under the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, as a biopesticide, and then it's also considered a food by the FDA.
Do things like BT necessarily hurt humans? I mean, there are some things that can be harmful to insects and or other critters out there in the world, but really to have no effect on humans. Is that possible?
That's what we don't know. That is where the science is out, because if you look for an independent two-year-long study, like the lifetime of a rat, on particularly a BT corn or a genetically modified organism that produces own BT, you won't find it. And you'll find the industry saying, oh, this is the most tested food in the world, it's completely safe. And all they have are three-month-long studies, like I said, usually done by the industry or funded by the industry. The FDA does not do the testing. It reviews the information given to it by the industry. And so you have a situation where those who gain from this and benefit from their own products being sold and grown, and so they can sell more chemicals, they're the ones telling us it's safe. And I mean, really, have we learned nothing in this country from the lead industry, from the tobacco industry, from the collapse of the housing market and the banks? I mean, do we trust these giant corporations who are not asking questions about, wow, how should we then live together as a society? How can we improve human health? How can we live more sustainably, even if it costs our profits? They don't ask those questions. Big corporations like this ask questions of increased profit, the bottom line, and they are beholden to shareholders to do that, usually at whatever the cost of the environment. And we see this over and over again with big companies.
Let's take a call. We have Pam and Dexter on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jeremy Seifert, the director of GMO OMG.
Hi. Well, I think this is such a great, important topic, and it kind of reminds me of the Monsantos remind me of Rex Tillerson of Exxon and how they, they'll do anything to deny it and lie, and the subsidies always go to the fossil fuel industry when it should go to the clean renewables. And anyways, but my question is about how the GM food, crops affect bees, because I've heard it was associated with the colony collapse disorders. There's a lot of different factors that play into it, but I just wonder if you'd touch on that and kind of how important our bees are.
All right, thanks for that.
On the radio. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, this is obviously a huge problem, colony collapse disorder, and there's a few good docs out there about it. From my research, nothing 100% definitive has been linked to colony collapse disorder from GMOs themselves, but possibly a new line of pesticides, and I can't think of the name of the pesticides right now. It's difficult to pronounce. It's like neonicotinoid or something.
Neonicotinoid, yes.
Yes.
Indicating the nicotine in there, yeah.
Yes. And there's a great, pretty big article in Time from, I think, just a month ago or 2 months ago. I've been on too many planes and in too many airports
right.
The last 8 weeks. So, but yeah, they're linking that pesticide to possible colony collapse disorder, and that particular strain of pesticides was introduced almost the same time as GMOs in the mid-90s, and it's been banned in quite a few countries around the world and in the EU specifically. You know, the other thing about that is that when they've taken samples within these beehives of the pollen collected, they have found upwards of 12 to 20 different types of herbicides, pesticides, and fungicides. So, I mean, we're literally, you know, coating the land and the water with these toxic chemicals. And, yeah, maybe in the laboratory, even if that one fungicide has been tested and found to be safe, when you introduce it into the environment and a bee picks it up and it interacts with that bee and 10 other pesticides and fungicides and all of the elements that go in those, that's what hasn't been tested and how those all interact together and interact when we consume them and they then interact with our bodies. So I think we're moving too fast and not fully appreciating the intricacies of nature and the interconnectedness of all of this.
Here's another call from Dell in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jeremy Seifert. His film is GMO OMG.
Hello.
Hi.
I listened to you guys in the car and got his idea about pesticides being tested for 3 months in the lab on rats. But we don't know if we as humans eat this pesticide food, and as women, if we become pregnant and the pro-lifers say life starts at conception, that dot at conception is going to absorb these pesticides faster than our bodies, and so we will have birth defects we don't even know about. And he just said that it's in the bees. Well, then we eat the honey. I mean, it's becoming a national pro-global problem, and we don't need GMOs and pesticides in our food already. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for that, Dell. Appreciate it. I can't imagine there's much to add to that for you, Jeremy.
That sums it up pretty well. I mean, I'll add that a recent study in the EU found Roundup in human urine. We've known that it's been found in soil, rain, streams, but that it's found in human urine is just a tad bit alarming.
You did make a visit to Monsanto, which, of course, is the focus of the ire of most of the people who have a problem with GMO stuff. So which Monsanto office did you go to, and what kind of response did you get?
Yeah, I stopped by a giant facility north of Des Moines, Iowa. And, you know, I had called the headquarters a few times looking for an interview and always got transferred about 17 times and then end up leaving messages with, like, their film and media outreach department or something and never got a return call. And I called a facility south of Des Moines the day before we stopped at this particular one. And so I hadn't talked to anybody at this facility. We saw it while we were driving up the highway, and so we pulled over and put the lav mic on under my shirt and started rolling the camera and then just drove up. I hopped out, and the cameraman stayed inside the van. And right when I walked in, there was a kind of fairly large guy with, like, a motorcycle T-shirt on or something standing there, and there was a woman on the phone, and I said, hello, and she said, may I help you, sir? And I said, yeah, I'd like to talk to someone about... And then she cut me off and said, yeah, no, he's right here. Yeah, Jeremy? And I said, yeah, that's my name. She said, here you go, phone's for you. And it was the woman at the other facility, 50 miles away. I don't know if they knew I was coming or how they would. I'm not sure because I didn't tell anyone. But anyway, she just kept repeating on the phone, Jeremy, you need to leave right now. And all I was asking was, hey, I'm a concerned father. I've found out that your product is nearly inescapable. It turns up in 80% of processed foods. So essentially you're, you know, a part of feeding my family and children. And I want to know if these products are safe. And I want to be taken through the process. And they just kept asking me to leave. And then more people kind of came into that lobby area. And I was basically ushered out.
That's an interesting sequence of events, though, to walk in and say, here, the phone's for you. It doesn't happen every day. Got about 2 minutes left with Jeremy Seifert. Let's take a quick call. Here's Kim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, I have a very simple question that I bring up every once in a while. Are there GMO soybeans and other legumes? seems like almost all of it is society got addicted to all the stuff that robbed the ground and not legumes that put nitrogen back in the grounds. Is it just general society's problem as much as anything?
All right, so GMO and soybeans, and I believe the answer is a resounding yes, isn't it?
Yeah, over 90% of soybeans in this country are genetically modified.
Really? That many? Okay, let's take another call from Val in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jeremy Seifert.
Who?
You, Val.
Oh, okay, great. I wanted to ask Jeremy if the main complaint against GMOs is the introduced protein or the DNA, or is it the toxins that they're treating the plants with afterwards?
All right, thanks for that question.
I think that different scientists would come in on different reasons. I mean, it's environmental, it's potential human health. I mean, the fact that there's an epigenesis within the genetic coding that they could produce unknown proteins or unplanned for proteins, that's a concern to many scientists who advocate to slow down and for precautionary principle to come into play here. And, you know, there's other technologies through traditional breeding, like gene mapping, that seems to be far more promising than the current GMOs on the market.
So you've got GMO OMG coming to Ashland this week. Is there another film already in the works? You're taking it easy for a while?
I'm taking it easy and also trying to figure out what's next. I'm excited to start something new soon.
All right, Jeremy Seifert's film GMO OMG will be at the Varsity Theater in Ashland Thursday at 5:30 and 8 p.m. brought in by the Ashland Independent Film Festival. Jeremy Seifert, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. It'll do it for the Exchange completely today. And on the Exchange tomorrow at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about elder financial abuse. In our Vents Day segment, we'll talk about property taxes and whether they should be changed and about drug regulations. And then we'll talk to the folks who provide justice in Honduras. That'll include a conversation with former JPR News Director Lucy Edwards. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our production assistant today, Colleen Pike. Thank you, Colleen. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Have a great day.